Welcome to our 28th episode of From the Horse Box, and a special welcome to our new bridge playing listeners.
It was great that people enjoyed listening to Andrew, so let's hope they play the cards right and continue to enjoy our podcast.
Meanwhile, you've been busy with the horses, Claire, and Peter Roselli, our family patriarch and previous podcaster, is about to become a nonagenarian.
I couldn't have put it better myself, and as we all head towards winter, we've called today's episode Autumn at Alderford. However, I'm sure you'll agree there's no slowing down as the year ends, it's all go, and Rob Bevington is going to get us all up to speed.
Here we are at Alderford, near Whitchurch, where you can enjoy endless outdoor pursuits and 47 acres of amazing countryside. Rob, you described Alderford as a place for all people. You run so many activities and events. Tell us what's on offer here.
Well, at the moment we've got our Halloween event on, so we're scaring people to death, well, hopefully not to death. And then that will cease on the 31st through into Bonfire Night on the 5th. So Bonfire Night's been a bit of a staple in the diary from the year dot, really. Whereas all the other things have kind of fit in around it now. But Bonfire Night should see 5,000 people, sort of fun fair, fireworks. We do two lots of firework displays. So we do a sound sensitive one for the little ones. And then a big main display as well to try and top it off. Through to, we try and do sort of events for all seasons, really.
So, but your regular activities are very much, as you say, seasonal with the swimming and the...
Yeah, so we've got people wild swimming all year round. They are fairly hardcore, shall we say. We don't like to say mad, we like to call them quirky. A customer's get a bit annoyed if you call them mad, but yeah, so they're swimming all year round, through to paddleboarding all year round, and then into aquapark, which starts at Easter, is it? As soon as we get the water temperature, anything like right, and we'll start with that, and canoeing and kayaking.
And your regular things again, so dog walking?
Yeah, people coming for exercise, getting out into the countryside, just having a break. And it's a brilliant place because once you've walked around, you've earned a coffee and a cake.
Sounds good. Now, Whitchurch is the main sort of travel hub, isn't it, for lots of our journeys. And you said, you told us about 30,000 cars going past years ago, so it's probably double that.
Yeah, I wouldn't know where the numbers are today, but that was always the figure that was banded around.
So you've got this huge sort of market.
When I started the business, we hated the bypass because it was always this big noisy thing there. And now as the trees and everything have matured, we realise that actually it's our biggest asset in that people can be here within 2-hour drive. You can be a long way away. So actually it's one of our biggest pluses.
Well, it's critical to the whole thing, but we'll get to that in a moment. So to set the scene, your parents originally farmed here as arable farmers, and you had an idyllic childhood with your two siblings, but there was no lake. In 1991, it all changed.
Yeah, so the Whitchurch bypass came through, and actually where we're sitting today, Dad and I were harvesting potatoes, and there was diggers chasing us across the field. Dad had sold the sand and gravel, so we were harvesting the potatoes off it as quick as we could to try and get out of the way of the diggers. And I think in the end they did buy quite a few acres of potatoes because they were in such need of the sand and gravel. So they sort of chased us off the site, but all credit to Mum and Dad, they were the ones that wanted it all landscaped and planted up.
So Rob, whose idea was it to have the lake? Because that's obviously central to Alderford. So was it something that was driven by the family or the planners or geography?
I think it was something that was always in Mum and Dad's mind. They kind of had the vision for it, knew what they wanted to achieve. And so I was only 15 at the time, so I was still at school and not really part of it then. So it was all credit to them that they were influential in the what trees were planted, how the shape of the lake was finished and everything like that. So it was all their vision, that really.
So the planners were helpful with all that?
I wouldn't say they were always helpful. I think they were very hard to deal with when you're dealing with big construction firms like that. Dad employed a really good man who was able to deal with them, and Dad sort of handed it over to them because they were very hard to deal with. I know he speaks very highly about the man who acted on his behalf.
So how big is the lake and what was it originally stocked with?
So 15 acres of water, and it's always been a trout fishery from day one. And that was Mum and Dad's sort of idea. That's the route that they took. And from literally as soon as the bypass was finished being built, I think within 12 months it was open as a trout fishery.
And can you still fish today?
No. So I was the one that spoilt that, really, in that I took over in 2011. And we were still doing trout fishing then. And I sort of soon realised that actually being here, running it, the trout fishermen were an older, more select group and dwindling numbers. And so I realised that selling somebody a piece of cake and a coffee was a lot easier than trying to keep a fisherman happy.
Yes, so they've been replaced by the swimmers.
Yeah, absolutely.
And this amazing sort of spring-fed water is obviously regularly tested. And you mentioned that you had 50 lifeguards trained in open water swimming.
Yeah, so at the peak in summer, we do all our training in-house as well now. So we've got our staff trained as deployers. So we do all our own in-house training. We feel it's more appropriate to our site rather than them coming with their own qualifications. Yeah, the water, pretty well, we're very fortunate in the water quality and it's one of the start of the tributaries for the River Severn. So we are almost all spring fed. As you swim out, you can feel all the cold springs coming up against you.
Oh, lovely. Are you one of the trained 50?
No. Oh. I don't know. I don't think I'm trained to do anything.
So the lake's a really good habitat for flora and fauna. So what do you think it hosts?
So we get all sorts of bits and bobs here. We get all the usual sort of normal stuff. We get a few egrets coming through every so often as well. I think they're making their way onto the moss. We've seen an otter a couple of years back. So it's nice to see one of those here. Probably wouldn't have gone down too well with the fishermen back in the day. Oyster catchers, always welcome to see, but it's quite interesting now with people walking around all the time. You tend to see the wildlife early morning and then it disappears. And then we just get left with a few ducks floating about. And then as soon as people finish at sort of 5 o'clock again, it all comes out again.
So they look at their watches and...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They can see when there's people walking around with dogs and actually it disappears and then starts again.
So do you think the lake provides a migratory stop at all for
different species? Yeah, definitely.
Egrets, where are they from?
No idea.
Are they Egyptian or something? Okay, don't you know this?
No, don't throw me under the bus.
And it must be a breeding, an important breeding spot as well.
Yeah, I mean, we've in the spring, it's alive with ducklings and all sorts over there. So, yeah, it's nice to... I think, in a way, the people and the dogs that walk around offer it a certain element of shelter as well because they haven't got the predators around it all the time.
Well, it's certainly very beautiful. Apart from the fishing that no longer happens, it was a wedding venue run by your parents, James and Charles Bebbington. And you were contract farming in those days and then became a Nuffield Scholar in 2010. Now, From the Horsebox loves a Nuffield Scholar. I think you are our third. Tell us where the scholarship took you and what it meant to you.
We won a farming competition and within a week of winning just a local Wem Farms competition, Alan Griffiths had been on the phone for me to go around and have a coffee with him. So I went round and had a coffee with him and I got there and he'd filled in my application form for me and said, you just need to sign there, boy, and I'll send it off and sort it out for you. Didn't really know much about it at the time, but it's the best kick up the arse that I've had in a long time. He was brilliant at that.
How amazing. Lucky he didn't enter you for any other competition.
I don't think I'd have got anything else.
So where did he send you?
I did America, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, China. So it was a great snapshot at 13 weeks travel all around the globe, meeting some amazing people.
And where did you find the best farming?
Just all different sorts. So the reason I probably have opened a cafe was I bumped into a lady in Tasmania who had a cheese shop, and her name was Jane Bennett, and just called in one day as I was driving past, and she could tell me that she learned to make cheese in a place in the UK that I'll have never heard of called Whitchurch. And so anyway, she'd learned to make cheese with Jill Hutchinson Smith, and had subsequently opened a farm shop in Tasmania on a road similar to ours, and had got this great business that she'd got there set up, all on the back of...
And that was just a chance meeting?
Just a chance meeting. So we sat down in the sunshine and drank two or three bottles of lovely white wine. And I sort of left that visit thinking, well, I can do this. You know, it can't be that hard to do this. So that's probably what spurred me on to open the cafe.
Gosh, that's quite something. Whitchurch, the centre of everything cheese, and farm shop, fancy farm shops and wonderful produce.
Well, Tassie is also really into its food and everything,
yeah,
isn't it?
Amazing. Yeah, brilliant.
Returning from your travels in 2011, you joined the family business. You still farm locally and run a large storage operation, but you have swapped your nuptials for nautical activities at the lake.
It just seemed to be the right thing to do. It seemed to be what people wanted. And there was many a time when I almost stopped all of the wild swimming. You go back sort of 6 or 7 years, and it was sort of a bit more niche. There wasn't that many people about, and it was costing a fortune to test the water. And anyway, we sort of stuck with it because, again, they like to buy a coffee and a cake afterwards. And then when COVID came, it just saw exponential growth.
Alongside everything outdoor, you mean?
Yeah. You know, you couldn't buy a wetsuit, you couldn't buy a paddleboard. Everything went completely crazy. But I think it was an amazing time for people to reconnect with nature and actually understand that you don't need to go to a heated, chlorinated swimming pool. And actually, there are some really nice places out there that you can do it elsewhere in under different circumstances.
Well, they couldn't anyway, half of them, could they? They were...
No, especially with Wales closed as well. It sort of sent a whole other gang here as well. So it was a really good way to get people to find out where we were, what we did.
With your farming background, you can obviously turn your skills to anything around here. You know, all these things, there's always something need fixing. What sort of things do you have to do day to day to keep it running?
There's always something to do. We've got two full-time maintenance men on the go at the moment. And then there's myself and Dad as well that sort of get pulled in as well to tidy things up. It's great having so many people on site, but there's always things being destroyed and broken as well. And there's a lot of not so glamorous sides to my job, unfortunately, as well.
And where we're sitting, you built this porter cabin, which looks as if it's sort of out of, you know, Homes and Gardens, and you built this.
I don't mind. I'm probably a bit more practical. I don't really understand a lot of what goes on within the business with online and that sort of side of it, whereas I can understand screws, hammers and crosscut saws and things like that.
In 2017, Darnford became Alderford. What's behind the name?
The one thing when we asked most people as to what they thought was the most prominent thing here was the island with the alder tree on. And I learned a lot about trademarks at the time. So actually I realised that we couldn't have alder as a trademark, whereas we invented a word rather to... that we could buy the trademarks for, we could buy the website. So it had to be something that would fit in all aspects of the business, and Alderford seemed like a really nice fit. And I think the fact that people now refer to it as Alderford, as sort of that's what they know it as.
And Ford is associated with water, isn't it?
So yes, underground stream.
Yeah.
And so it just sort of seemed to be a natural fit, and I think it's put us in good stead going forward.
Yeah, no, it's a lovely name, and you particularly enjoy the season sort of thing, and it conjures up that too, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Tell us more about your events programme. Obviously, we've done Halloween and Bonfire Night. What's your Christmas activities?
Christmas activities. We've got a boat ride to see Father Christmas over on the island. And so the wish list from the team is that we can make them a toy workshop over on the islands this year. So we'll be doing that and putting in a bit of a bar for adults so that they can have a glass of mulled wine whilst the kids are taken to the toy workshop.
So dreamy.
So we'll see how we can deliver on
that. We might be booking in.
Well, there are all sorts of exciting things on. I've had a look at the website. That island provides a lot of fun, doesn't it? Because I've seen something which I'm sure Kate would be interested in. This captive on the island. It sounds like your thing, Kate. It says you can be taken hostage and have to find your way off.
Yeah. Yeah. On the back of the escape rooms that have been so popular around the country, the team decided that they could also do it with what we'd got with the boats and the jetties and the staff that we'd got to keep them occupied on quieter days. And it's certainly been a brilliant thing like that. So maintenance team do get quite a few funny requests to make sort of real life human cages and things like that, and have lots of handcuffs and things like that on the island. So it's quite out there some days.
Your staff must be pretty special to be able to adapt to all these different things.
They're absolutely amazing. I find myself at 45 being like an old dinosaur. And they're a great young team and they take on lots of these challenges absolutely brilliantly.
So sometimes you entertain up to 2,500 people a day?
Yeah, we were busier than that in COVID. And I think we realised that it wasn't a place that we liked very much. We didn't feel like we were offering a good service. So we've cut it back. We limit ourselves to 2,500 people a day through the summer. And it feels like a nicer place. People are more, have more space, more relaxed, and actually able to enjoy it more.
It's not so stressful for everyone, is it?
You have various managers, obviously, for different segments of entertainment and obviously lots of people under them.
Yeah, so we grew and grew and grew and completely lost control in COVID. And so we had to sort of regroup and come up with a bit of a system. So it was a great challenge to have, but also actually people really showed their true colours in COVID as well. And those people that really wanted to be part of the business and shared the vision, and they sort of, the cream will always rise, won't it? And I think we were absolutely chuffed to bits to get that opportunity to give people really good jobs and to let them become decision makers within the business. So yeah, it's been a really good process to go through.
What are your future plans for this, your festival, the Older Fest, next summer? That looks exciting.
We're talking to various bands at the moment and dealing with various riders and all sorts. It's a world I know nothing about, but it's exciting. I had a first one last year, which I think was a great success. So we're just trying to build on that success and take it forward.
So you haven't actually chosen who you're going to have headlining yet?
We have, but contractually we're not allowed.
Aren't you allowed to say?
We're not allowed to put anything on Facebook or anything at the moment. It's all very much...
When will that be sort of released?
I'd like to get it out as soon as possible. But unfortunately, it's one of those things that we're not able to at the moment.
And did you say it's going to be an extra day? How many days?
Yeah, so we're doing the Friday night and the Saturday this year. So last year was just the Saturday. So we've got a bit of a dance evening on the Friday, followed by an all-day family festival on the Saturday.
Right, put it in your diary, Claire.
People love the festivals, don't they?
Your children enjoy ponies and bikes, both with horsepower. It must give you a lot of pleasure to see them enjoying the same things and the beautiful surroundings that you had in your childhood.
Yeah, we had a brilliant childhood. I seem to remember getting thrown off a few ponies and thought, well, that's the end of that. I'm never getting on one of those wild animals again. Probably a bit too much too soon. So, it was always two wheels for myself. And interesting to see how it's followed on with my kids. They're both actually enjoying the riding, but... I did buy Ada a motorbike this year, although I seem to have spent more time on it than she has.
So, Rob, thank you. There's so much going on here. I think it's amazing that you do have something for everybody to visit. So it's a big success story for the whole area.
Well, we're very proud of it. We've got a great team and they're doing a brilliant job.
Yeah, so it's wonderful to see. Now, to finish with, we've got some quick fire questions. So, Kate, do you want to start?
Bungee smugglers or wetsuit?
What a question, Kate.
Claire made it up.
I did not.
I'm not sure anybody should be put under any pressure to see me in either, to be quite honest. But wetsuit every time.
Big dogs or small ones?
Big dogs.
What never fails to make you laugh?
Don't really know. Bit of Channel 4, Dom Jolly, Green Wing, something like that. Great to be sharing Dom Jolly with my kids. It seemed to be on the same level there with humour.
If you were to write a book, what would it be about?
I don't think I will ever write a book. So I'm not sure it would ever get that far. It would be about how to write a book, because obviously somebody has shown me how to do it.
I thought it might be a maintenance manual or something.
Definitely not, no.
Young farmers or Will Young?
Oof, young farmers. Nothing against Will Young, but young farmers.
A real country question, this. What is your favourite smell?
Probably coming into work on a morning and finding that there's no coffee beans in the grinder, opening a new bag of beans, or possibly when Matt has taken the scones out of the oven, 9 o'clock in the morning.
Delicious. Finally, we ask our guests to finish with a joke or an inspirational quote.
I listened to Annabelle Fernald's from the Horse Box, and she'd stolen my joke already. Actually, it's a Freddie Fernald one about a man with five willies, but...
it's remember that one.
I don't know. Inspirational quote, probably Kipling, if, or maybe the man in the arena... from Roosevelt. Go and have a look.
Thank you very much, Rob. We'll have to go and look up those quotes.
Thank you very much. Thanks for coming. Welcome anytime.
It's amazing that one can live locally to Alderford and actually know so little about it. Employing hundreds of staff to ensure the activities run smoothly and the beautiful and peaceful surroundings are maintained. It really is a place for all people. I can see you Googling madly, Claire. How are you getting along with those quotes?
Oh, I love these quotes. The Kipling if is well known, but the Theodore Roosevelt quote was more interesting, and it says, "The credit belongs to the man who is actually in the arena, whose face is marred by dust and sweat and blood," meaning that the credit should go to the doer, basically, and not the expert on the sidelines, which can often happen. And I can tell from our interview why Rob favours this sentiment with his hands-on approach.
Goodness. Thank you so much for listening.
Yes, please share with your friends and followers so that you won't miss our next episode when it could be you in the driving seat.